Support for TPR comes from UT San Antonio, offering degree programs and research focused on workforce development, student success, and health innovation across Texas. UTSA.edu. UT San Antonio, the University of Ambition.
I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, Cuba is in a deep, prolonged crisis. There is a shortage of food, medicine, and electric power. The people of Cuba are suffering. Meanwhile, President Trump is saber-rattling and threatening the island nation with military action to bring about regime change. A San Antonio organization is sending humanitarian relief to Cuba. We're going to hear about their work. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to helping Texas communities and emphasizing safety. More at texasmutual.com/texansgetit.
Live from the John L. Santico Studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source. From Texas Public Radio, I'm David Martin Davies. Cuba is enduring one of the most severe economic and humanitarian crises in modern history. Long blackouts, shortages of food and medicine, daily life is increasingly difficult. The crisis is now deepening as President Donald Trump raises the possibility of military action against Cuba. Amid the turmoil, a group of San Antonio residents trying to help through humanitarian aid and cultural connections. The San Havana Project began as an exchange between artists in San Antonio and Havana and has expanded into an effort to provide assistance to Cuban artists, families, and communities facing severe shortages. Joining us this afternoon is Angela Martinez, the San Antonio cultural artist, owner of Slab Cinema, and leader of San Havana Project. Angela, it's good to have you on The Source today.
Good to be here.
Also with us, Anthony Garcia, owner, is also with the San Havana Project and a local artist. Anthony, it's good to have you.
Good morning.
And with us also online is Mercedes Gallego. Sorry about that. Also with us is Gallego, an award-winning Spanish journalist and author who has reported on Cuba for 3 decades. And Mercedes, welcome to The Source.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, Angela, give me an overview. What is the San Havana Project? How did y'all get started?
We originally started as just a way to go to Cuba and go to Cuba legally. And we built this project, this art project, a collaboration. We took several San Antonio artists over there. We put together an art show, and then we made friends. And making those friends changed everything.
When did y'all start?
About 3 years ago.
And in that time, have you seen things change quite a bit on the ground in Cuba?
It's been a very steady decline, and I didn't realize we were already in the middle of the decline when we started this. You know, just kind of going and not realizing how much they were already suffering.
And so, Anthony, tell me about the art exchange. What does that look like?
What we did originally was bring art supplies to the artist. It started with having an art show down there to get to know artists down there and see how things are, see how the art showings were down there, and just to collaborate and for all of us to grow. And it just slowly morphed into bringing more and more supplies down there to help the people. And now it's grown to be so much more, just letting people know their plight and what's going on down there with just the everyday people.
Mercedes Gallego, tell me about what is happening with Cuba. Why are they in this crisis right now?
Well, as you know, Cuba has been under embargo for almost 7 decades, but now this has been 6 months without any oil shipment in an island that is not Texas, that it always have depended on foreign oil, mostly from Mexico and Venezuela. But now, since January, it's getting numb.
And that means no electricity, no gasoline. How does that translate into, you know, it just basically the economy is imploding?
Exactly. Dire is not a strong enough word. The entire grid runs on oil. nothing is really working. This is like the day after a monster hurricane that only gets worse and lasts forever. Petrol stations have been empty for months. ATMs don't work. Schools are closed. There are endless rolling blackouts, at best 2 hours of electricity a day if you're lucky. Many people have been without running water for months. And hospitals have to cancel surgeries. Vaccines are getting ruined. The food is getting spoiled in the factories. And also keep in mind that we are now in the summer with 70% of humidity. Temperature feels over 100 degrees. And for most people, because there is not any more gas for public transportation or car services, the only way to get around is walking or biking long distances, sometimes between cities. And between the heat, the sound of the generators at night, the empty stomachs, people can't even sleep. It's really an atrocity that is being perpetrated on the population to force a regime collapse.
Mercedes, the Trump administration says this economic collapse is due to the ineffectiveness of the communist government. Can you kind of help me understand that?
Yes, absolutely. This has been the U.S. government has been very successful spreading this theory that is not free. That there is certainly a lot of criticism to spread around, and the Cuban government actually is assuming, is taking responsibility on that speech, because the population is really exhausted and fed up. Since the special period in the 90s, that is when I started going to Cuba, the Cuban government has made the strategic decision to invest on tourism instead of perhaps investing in other industries or even in renewing the infrastructure. Right. So for the population that is going through all these endless troubles, they're seeing the hotels that still function, that they have everything that they could need for to feed the foreigners that visit the island. And this creates a lot of resentment. The idea that Washington is spreading, and I'm not taking a position in this is true or not, is that the Communist Party and the members of the government has been using the revenue as corruption. And I haven't seen any proof of this, but this in a population that is certainly exhausted and tired from all this for 7 decades, this is really the strategy that they themselves take over on the government. At this moment, what you are seeing in Havana is a cacophony at night and even during the days of banging pots and pans in the street as a form of protest. They're called caceroladas. And you know, there is still a lot to go. We don't know how much longer people is able to take this pain.
But the people, Mercedes, they don't really have a voice in how the government is run, do they?
No, certainly they don't have a voice in how it's run. I don't think the Cuban elections have credibility around the world. You know, this is the Trump government was even expecting Iranians taking over on the Iranian government, and the repression there was serious. I think it would be much easier for them, in their view, to have the Cuban people uprising and taking over the government or topping down the government.
So we'll talk more about that when we come back from the break. Our phone lines are open. If you've got a question or a comment about what is happening on the ground in Cuba as the United States is talking about doing some sort of military action with the Cuban island nation, with the communist island nation, call in 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues after this 1 minute break. Stay with us.
Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio. South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're joined by the San Havana Project. It is a San Antonio artist collective. They go to Cuba and they do a cultural exchange with Cubans and also a humanitarian relief effort. We're joined by Angela Martinez and Anthony Garcia there with San Havana Project. And also with us is Mercedes Gallego. She is an award-winning Spanish journalist, and she has been reporting on Cuba for 3 decades. If you get a question or a comment about what is happening there, as we're hearing from the Trump administration that they're going to try to do something about Cuba, meaning like something that happened in Venezuela. I don't know if that could happen in Cuba, but that's what they're talking about. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Anthony Garcia, you've been talking to someone you know in Cuba now, today, and what are they telling you?
They're telling me they don't, because they don't have no, or having problems rolling blackouts with their electricity for days, up from anywhere from 8 to 20 hour blackouts, and their lack of air conditioning, just water, all the basic things. This gentleman happens to be a cab driver, so he's out of work.
So he can't get gasoline to be a cab driver? He doesn't have fares for people to pick up?
It's a little of everything. The black market is up to $35 a gallon. He gave me all the stats this morning. I wrote them all down in disbelief. But just to get by, there's some kind of political thing going on because certain rental cars can get gas up to 5 gallons a day, but they have to stay in line starting the previous day into the next day to be one of the 120 people to be able to get 5 gallons. So what they may be doing is they'll get this gas, siphon it out, and sell it on the black market, which you can get much more money for. It's a mess, and that's just to get by. They're doing things like that. This gentleman is having a hard time sleeping because of the extreme heat and humidity. And the mosquitoes are so overwhelming over there because of the trash in the street that can't be picked up because there isn't vehicles to pick up the trash because of lack of fuel. When I was there, it was bad. There was piling up in the streets. They were trying to consolidate all the trash into certain areas. But now it's just so much of it and piled up so high. And then when it does rain, we have the mosquito issue over there. It was bad when I was there. It's probably threefold now.
With the food shortage, food scarcity, what's that look like?
Well, the government does help with, I don't know exactly all the food. I just saw the bread lines, and they were real bread lines, and they started really early in the morning. They still pay for the bread, but it's really inexpensive. And I don't think there's a lot of protein. The group of friends I had, their musician friends, they were really small. They're like malnutritioned young men, and you can just see it. And they're struggling. They're making it happen, of course, you know.
Yeah. But, So Angela Martinez with the San Havana Project, how do y'all get to Cuba? I thought, isn't Cuba off limits?
Until this last December, I don't know how it is now, but we've just been flying from the States directly into Havana, so either through Houston or Miami. And
so you don't have to get a special cultural pass or visa or anything?
Well,
anyone go to Cuba or just, you know?
I think there's 12 reasons, legitimate pathways to go, and we're going under support of the Cuban people. So that means taking in medicine, food, toys, clothes, supplies.
What kind of medicine do you bring in?
We take anything we can get. The first time I was able to get a lot of prescription medicines that people had in their medicine cabinets and things.
Maybe like antibiotics?
Yes, antibiotics, insulin, diabetes test strips, And I can't convey how important that was. Even the diabetes test strip, my friend said that we saved his mother's life just by her being able to test her diabetes.
How do you fund this?
Self-funded. Badger my friends.
And what is the attitude of the people of Cuba as they're dealing with this? I mean, why do they think this is happening? Do they have a logical explanation?
They have a pretty good understanding of why everything's happening, and they're a very tenacious group of people. Our friends are across the spectrum. Some won't say anything or very, very little. They'll say, oh, it's bad. It hasn't gotten better. And then to the other side of the spectrum, you know, talking to our friends, it'll tell us that the real truth of everything that's going on, you know.
So you're looking at art. You're doing an art exchange. Is this reflected in the art? How is that?
Well, they'll keep it hidden in like
because it's a depressive regime where there is no free expression.
Right, and it'll show in their art, but they can't come right out and say it. It's in metaphor in the paintings and things. I show it. Have a there's Cuban artist here in San Antonio, and they'll show in my studio downtown, and they'll explain to me where the ideas and concepts of the paintings come from. It gets pretty heavy. They've been through a lot.
Mercedes Gallego, award-winning Spanish journalist, reported on Cuba for 3 decades. Where do you think this is going? I mean, how much worse can it get?
Well, something that I have watched in Cuba since the 90s and is worth to say is the resilience and the resourcefulness of Cuban people. It's amazing how right now they are cooking with wood and mm-hmm. adapting cars to run on charcoal. You know, these people can go to places that are out of our imagination from the comfort of our houses, right? But what I'm seeing is that the Cuban government have watched what happened in Venezuela, have watched what happened in Iran, and even other countries are taking note, like Mexico did, and even European countries. So they're negotiating with Washington, and I'm seeing moves that they're willing to come to an agreement. I don't know when this is going to break, but right now I believe there is enough dialogue to see what happened. We know that the Trump administration is perfectly capable of a military attack. We have seen this over and over. But I think their preference is to have, like you mentioned, a solution like in Venezuela, where part of the government agreed to work with Washington.
Yeah, they filed charges against Raul Castro. Seems to be setting the groundwork for some sort of, action like they did against Maduro. But, you know, that would have no impact on what's happening in Cuba. Even the people in Venezuela saying since Maduro has been, taken away, it hasn't really changed life in Caracas.
It hasn't. But this was a sign, a very strong sign, another tightening for the Cuban government. And President Díaz-Canel and Raúl Castro also have kind of responded, acknowledging in a public statement that some of the obstacles that they are suffering are also internal, that are not part of the blockade, and they're blaming the bureaucracy and the norms that impede those reforms. I personally am interpreting this like they're trying to walk this fine line of sort of an adjustment in that satisfies Washington, but certainly Raúl Castro doesn't want to leave Cuba or leave control of the government, and I think this is where the two countries are confronting this dire moment.
I mean, I guess, are we seeing a large wave of people leaving Cuba, trying to immigrate elsewhere? Mercedes?
That's correct. That's correct. Actually, the humanitarian organizations around the continent are preparing for what is already a very large exodus that countries like Brazil now has received more Cubans than Venezuelans, which is where they were the previous exodus, right? And a good part of the population is already outside the country. We're talking about 1/6 of Texas, about I think is 10 million people. So any number that is going outside, you can imagine Human Rights Watch have documented that just the Trump administration has deported from the U.S. over 4,000 Cubans to Mexico. So this is a very spread problem across the continent.
Angela Martinez, tell me a story about something you've seen there that kind of puts this all in perspective. How are people doing? How are families doing?
There's a lot of stories to tell, but one of my friends is a mom. She has three boys, and her son has congenital heart disease, and he really needs surgery. And he can't get it, and they were in the hospital for several weeks, a couple of months ago. He can barely eat. She's not getting any food. She was sending me pictures of the food she got. It's not even soup. And so they were waiting there for the surgery, and then they just had to send him home because they just canceled the surgeries because there's no electricity. And now they're living in the house, and his heart's getting worse. And he was just graduating from high school this week, and he was upset because he didn't have any good clothes to wear to graduation, and his heart's getting worse and he needs a surgery. And one good thing that happened is that he got to work with a local Cuban film director, and apparently they take the first five in the class, and he was seven, so he didn't make the cut, but the director liked him so much that the director brought him in, and he's getting to work with that. So on one side, you know, he's getting to realize his dreams, and then on the other side, he's slowly dying because he needs a surgery and he can't get it. And when they went into the hospital, they had to take all their own bed sheets. You have to take your own medicine, and you can buy the medicine on the black market.
But you need money.
Need money.
A lot of it.
And we try to send them money, but then, you know, there's this big cut that goes and you have to go through all of these hoops. So we're doing our best to try to help them out where we can.
So we can't lose sight of the humanity of the people of Cuba. And I think that's what art does. I mean, so Anthony, is the art communicating that we're talking about real people who are living through a terrible time, and that they are trying to make the most of it, that they still have a spirit with them? Is that what you're saying?
It shows. When we did shows, when we did art showings down there, and the artists all came together to hang the paintings and photography and everything, it shows how art is their escape from the wildness is going on over there right now. They just dive into their music and their paintings and everything. They really put their heart into everything they do. In many ways, that's all they have.
Mercedes, what's the future?
That's a hard one. I think the future is inevitably a change in Cuba. We don't know how far that change is going to go, but I believe that the road is leading for that change. Whether the government of Cuba and President Díaz-Canel and Raúl Castro are able to channel this into a peaceful resolution that results in a better way of living for the Cuban people, or Washington loses its patience, that's what remains to be seen.
Yeah, but on the ground, being able to help these people, it seems like this unnecessary suffering. We own that because this is also part of the U.S. policy. I want to thank you, Mercedes Gallego, the Spanish journalist. Thank you for coming on and talking to us and your reporting on Cuba. Anthony Garcia and Angela Martinez with the San Havana Project. You have your website. What is your website?
SanHavanaProject.com.
All right. Thank you so much. The Source on Texas Public Radio, David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.